You're listening to Sacks in the Basement, a production of the Broadcast Basement Limited, where every show is 30 minutes of good and comes from a basement bar on the south side of Chicago. Pull up a stool, pour a cold one, and join us right now for Sacks in the Basement. Heard everywhere podcasts can be found, and always at SacksInTheBasement.com.
Hey, White Sox fan, White Sox in the Basement. Well, I put it like this. I trade Lloyd Jimenez, Lewis Robert Jr., Jhonnyer Mercado, and I would have traded Andrew Vaughn and Gavin Sheets. You trade Andrew Vaughn and Gavin Sheets for Philadelphia Phillies got him. He can play first base and DH. He's getting older. Kyle Schwarber. He'll hit 40 home runs every year. He's got 100-something RBIs. The dude got power, and he can play first base.
You know, it's a cute idea to want to trade people, but nobody wants these guys. They're terrible, Ed.
Right. What team in their right mind is looking at Paul DeJong right now going, you know what, that's the answer to any of my questions?
I mean, here's the thing. The best case scenario, I texted you this the moment that Aloy was reactivated and put on the team.
Yeah.
The best case scenario for Aloy Jimenez is that he goes off for a couple of months and you can trade him at the deadline before he takes another injury and you can get out from underneath his contract, which is also why you're hoping, and I think Chris Getz is hoping based upon his comments this week, you're hoping Yoan Moncada's back for a couple of weeks before the deadline shows up as red hot and some team says we could use some defensive help that can play in a couple different positions, especially third base, and is a serviceable hitter. And we'll eat some of the money, take something off the books for the White Sox, even if it's the $5 million buyout at the end of the year, because you're moving on from him. Because these two guys don't fit on your roster for next year, because you have so many changes that need to be made, and you can't take on a guy who's always injured and another guy who's always, injured. They're all you got to get rid of these guys. There's a point where you got to move on.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that all you're doing, when you're a team this bad, okay, if you're talking about trading guys, what you're really looking for is you're looking for when do teams get desperate who actually need help, okay? And like the Rangers right now, a little bit of trouble at third base because Josh Young and Justin Foskey are both hurt, okay? So do they need a Yoan Moncada? Well, if Yoan Moncada was healthy, the Rangers, who are trying to win the AL West again, get back to the playoffs, get back to the World Series, might look at somebody like Yoan Moncada and go, the rest of our lineup's good enough, even if this guy is somewhere in the neighborhood of replacement level until these guys get back, we'll take a chance on him.
You're going to have to pay some of his salary.
But you're going to have to pay some of his salary.
Nobody's paying him $25 million plus the $5 million buyout. No, nobody's doing that if he was healthy. And it's moot because he's not healthy. And
exactly.
He probably isn't going to be back at the All-Star break.
Exactly.
And it just sounds like more hollow BS out of the White Sox organization where they tell you something because they need you to show up and buy a campfire milkshake. That guy's out three to 6 months. And knowing Yoan Moncada and the way he heals and the way things linger with him, because I've been watching him for years, he is not going to be a factor in any way. And I would be shocked if he was on the field at the All-Star break. I just don't buy it anymore. Just like you activate Aloy, but he's not ready to play full time. You don't give him a minor league stint. That was really weird. So what do? You bring him up at the end of a game because you think you're going to find Kirk Gibson magic from this guy? When your team can't buy a win, you're going to be like, we're going to set him up there at the very end for a pinch hit. And predictably, he strikes out because he's cold. And you didn't give him any kind of rehab
strikes
start.
Out it strikes out on a check swing on a slider, which is a very Aloy thing to do anyway. But there's no – Andrew Benintendi has no value, okay? Kevin Pillar has no value. Robbie Grossman has limited to no value. You're not going to trade Dominic Fletcher because you're kind of counting on him maybe being something.
And he's been hitting lately. He's starting to hit more.
And he is starting to come around. But Andrew Vaughn's not a prospect anymore. Andrew Vaughn is just suspect at this point, okay? Gavin Sheets – may or may not actually have any utility around the league because he's supposedly a power hitter, but I hate to tell you this, he's got one home run, and so that doesn't make him a power hitter. In fact, it just makes him a left-handed bat who can barely field. It's just there's not a lot there right now that the White Sox can trade, and if you're looking at like Chris Flexen or Mike Soroka, one of these pitchers that the Sox brought on with maybe the intent of flipping them, Mike Soroka's looked awfully pedestrian and bad. Chris Flexen has been bad. There aren't teams that are desperate enough to sit there and say, we're going to take a flyer on this guy because our rotation is that decimated by injury. Because at this point, every team around the league is just content to sit there and say, we've got our guys at AAA, we've got our guys in our farm system that we're going to bring up and give these guys a chance because they're not going to lose their status at this point in the season already. You're not going to trade anyone. You're just this is the team you're stuck with, and all Getz can do is DFA guys from here on out.
This episode of Sox in the Basement and every episode brought to you by Cork and Carry at the Park, your home for White Sox pregame, postgame, in-game, in the shadow of the ballpark at 33rd and Princeton, an award-winning menu of burgers and ballpark favorites at a great price. Bring the whole family in there before the game. Get them fed before you head over to watch whatever the White Sox are putting on the field that day. Yeesh. I'm actually developing like kind of a fun little segment at the Cork, and I may be having like town hall meetings there this summer, just grabbing a beer and talking about what we need to change. See more at corkandcarry.com. All right, there's a couple of guys that you mentioned there that I want to kind of dive into a little bit. Let's first get into the weird comments by Pedro Grifol about Aloy coming back and the strong possibility that Gavin Sheets could end up in right field to give him more at-bats before Aloy ends up in right field. And I'm here to tell you that an intelligent baseball manager, a guy who would be in lockstep with what the general manager has said he wants his team to be, even though it's a big giant failure, would not put Gavin Sheets out in right field. He would instead look at Andrew Vaughn and say, your replacement level player who's gotten 1,500 at-bats or more and is having a terrible start to the season, it's a platoon at first base now with Sheets and Vaughn. Or, better yet, send Andrew Vaughn with one of his three options down to the minor leagues and give him the time with instruction that he should have gotten years ago because it isn't working. There's nothing there. And what do you need him for up here struggling at first base? If you really want to give Gavin Sheets time and plate appearances because you want to see what this is it just a red hot first couple of weeks of the season? Or did he finally figure something out and he's going to get consistently good and you're going to start to see that power come along here and we don't want to take it out of our fledgling terrible lineup? Look, I get it. Play Aloy when he's healthy. Play Sheets, get him in the lineup. Don't play either one of them in the outfield, though. It flies in the face of why Tommy Pham has just been signed to a deal, an incentive-laden deal, and why you said, as an organization, you wanted to play better defense in the field, and you wanted to be able to have nine guys fielding their position. Gavin Sheets is a first baseman. He's not an outfielder, and Andrew Vaughn has done nothing to earn everyday time at first base.
No, Vaughn is, look, you know, we were sold that he's a prospect. We were sold he was the number three overall pick. AJ Pierzynski even referenced him in his little rant against the White Sox, which we can talk about. But you know, he's 26 years old, Vaughn is. He's not a guy that has turned into what we were sold he was going to be. His career OPS plus, which is kind of are you an above average or below average hitter, is 99, which means that he's basically an average guy. Now, granted, it's probably dragged down a little bit because right now his OPS plus is 35, which is like what you and I would do if we were to go out on the field every day for the White Sox or any other team. But his high is in 2022 at 111 when he still kind of was like, oh, he's 24 years old. Let's see what he is. And he's hitting 271. And you know, with the 750 OPS, that's the other thing too. The guy's got no power. Yeah, Andrew Vaughn might be an experiment gone wrong here. He might be a guy that the White Sox ruined that had potential once upon a time. So could you send him down? Absolutely. Could you give him more instruction, get him to just go down and barrel up some balls and focus on hitting the ball hard and using all fields and not whatever it is he's trying to accomplish up here and give Gavin Sheets time so that you could either trade him or establish whether or not Gavin Sheets is finally arriving, who is also in his late 20s now? There's a lot of different things you can do, but putting Gavin Sheets, who we've watched misplay balls in right field, putting Aloy Jimenez, who we've watched injure himself playing in the outfield, is not a good answer, especially when you're sitting there going, okay, well, we signed Robbie Grossman. We intend to play him as our leadoff hitter. We intend to play him frequently. We have Andrew Benintendi under contract. We just signed Tommy Pham, who, by the way, still considered to be a pretty decent shot at being a regular player in the major leagues. Gavin Sheets in right field makes zero sense. Eloy Jimenez in right field makes zero sense. Trying to work those three same guys into the lineup that didn't work last year, didn't work the year before, is just a manager that might at this point be begging to get fired.
Yeah, but they're not going to fire him because Jerry doesn't want to have a guy sit at home for nearly two seasons and get paid by the team. You know, if Jerry made the same amount of money as the rest of us, then I would understand that reasoning, right? Like, I wouldn't want to have to pay somebody to sit around at their home and do nothing. I'd like to be somebody who got paid to do nothing. I'd also like to save a little bit of money if I'm recovering at my home. Let's say you're doing that after a surgical procedure. Or you're just trying to keep mom and dad, grandma and grandpa out of assisted living and helping them switch to a new age of life. Make it so they can get around on their own and live independently. Stair lifts, ramps, grab bars, lift chairs, bathroom remodeling, and more, all available at Hyatt Home Medical Equipment. They work with your insurance and have 0% financing for qualified individuals. And if you use a CPAP machine and you're unhappy with your vendor, switch now and get supplies directly mailed to you. They also have the latest in continuous glucose monitors. Learn all about Hyatt Home Medical Equipment at HHME.com. You know, I believe that. I know there's always people that are sitting around going, oh, yeah, I mean, do you really believe that kind of stuff? Yeah, I believe it. I believe it. I've been watching him for 40 years. Okay, this is what the guy is. This is what he is as an owner. Where there's smoke, right, there's fire with him. When David Sampson said that he was told by Jerry Reinsdorf personally that it's better to come in second place and have that carrot out there for the fan base. Yeah, I believe it. I look at the Central Division and I see how all these other teams are in smaller markets and can't spend the kind of money that Jerry Reinsdorf, a billionaire four times over, could spend if he really wanted to win. And this team should have been winning division after division after division during his 40-year tenure, and they didn't. And his basketball accolades are Michael Jordan's, and guess what? They don't count towards his baseball team. Okay, Jerry Reinsdorf sat up in his little box the other day. Did you see that? It was trending on the social media. He looked like the owner from The Natural, looking out of a darkened window, overlooking what he had created. And it's all his creation, too. All of it is his creation. Right. And sat there, and I hope every fan that saw him yelled in his direction. I hope that's why he left at around the seventh inning and moved away from the window and went back into his cave or his crypt or wherever he keeps his old bones that we all wait for to pass on to the next world. Because when that happens, his legacy is going to be Sox fans saying, we now have hope. He's the same as Dollar Bill Wirtz to White Sox fans, as Wirtz was to Hawks fans. That's what he is. He's the guy we're all waiting to move on because there might be something better. I don't know if it'll be better. Life as a White Sox fan has me convinced that somebody else will come in there and screw it all up afterwards. But this is all him. Everything here. Chris Getz, it's him. There's a reason why AJ, you mentioned AJ Pierzynski. There's a reason why AJ Pierzynski goes on a little rant that I still can't understand completely.
I don't fully follow what AJ was trying to get at there, but no, he's mad.
I don't know what he's doing there. I know that he's upset, probably because he lost his ambassadorship. It sounds like that's been withdrawn. He's not a member of the team. He says, I don't work for them anymore. And maybe that happens when he throws Chris Getz under the bus on an interview we talked about a couple of weeks ago, where he tells him he's saying the same thing as Rick Hahn said, and he made him look foolish. But somewhere along the lines, that relationship has been cut. And I'm not surprised by it because he's a Hawk Harrelson guy, and Hawk's pissed off at the team too, if you look at recent interviews. So I think there's a faction that's kind of been created within this so-called family of White Sox players and broadcasters and people that were always part of the fold, who are looking around going, man, we suck. Who's running this operation? And the White Sox are doing predictably what they always do, just cutting those people off left and right. Just cutting them off. That's all I got from the AJ rant. I'm not exactly sure who he's blaming, because he says, well, you know, Getz doesn't pick the players, but, you know, he's not going to be like it was like he was going after him while also admitting that he didn't do what Rick and Kenny did, while also saying, I'm tired of hearing people blame Rick and Kenny. I'm not sure what he was saying. All I can tell is he's angry with the team, and he could be added to the list of people that have surrounded this team in years who have started to become very angry at the Emperor and yelled, he has no clothes.
Well, and I think one of the things that happens here, and it happens to all White Sox fans, and it happens to you and me from time to time too, although I think we're a little less gun-shy about saying it, is it, I almost feel like AJ wants to just go straight after Jerry. Okay, go after the guy who's never handed out a 100.
Then do it, AJ, because guess what?
You really should.
In 10 years, the new owner that comes in there after they buried the guy will bring you back. You won a World Series. You'll make it back.
Oh, yeah. If you want to be back with this organization, you will. Or maybe he's knows something about Jerry that we don't, and he's afraid that he'll be buried somewhere. But I don't know. I doubt that. But here's the thing. Jerry's never given out a $100 million contract. One of three Major League Baseball teams that's never done it. We talk about Andrew Benintendi having the richest contract in White Sox history. And it being kind of ridiculous because it was such a market-level contract for a guy who right now is not even living up to that.
Only two teams now. Only two teams haven't done it. Just the A's and the White Sox.
The Royals have done it because of Bobby Witt. Yep. You're right. I completely forgot about that. So
the Pirates, I think, have done it three times.
The Pirates, most recently they did it with Brian Reynolds, right?
So, and they're winning, by the way. Their rebuild seems to have worked.
Oh, I guess who else is, the Royals are actually, you know, they're competing this year for the AL Central title.
Right.
And the Athletics are the laughingstock of baseball the past couple of years because their owner is trying to move the team to Las Vegas and he's going to put them in a minor league stadium in between. So that's where we are with the White Sox. We're right there with the A's. Congratulations. Also, we share Tony La Russa's heyday as our history. So, you know, it's not too long until the A's trying to bring back La Russa and Dennis Eckersley to close. The only takeaway I can have from it is either you sit there and you say, well, Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams were very, very bad at their jobs in terms of figuring out how to develop players, figuring out how to draft guys, figuring out who made for good free agents. Roster construction was always an issue under those two guys. And Getz has a little bit of that because the player development aspect, even if Kenny and Rick hand you a pile of garbage, you need to mold it into something useful, right? Something tradable, something, okay? So I don't know if it's one of those things where you can sit there and AJ's indicting them for giving Chris Getz absolutely nothing to work with in the minor league system except for the top-heavy stars that Rick Hahn would look at. Like we've said, he'll look at MLB Pipeline and go, ooh, that's shiny, and I'll go after that guy, but not actually be able to evaluate the talent. Or if he's going after Chris Getz saying, look, every single baseball player who's drafted has the potential to be something, and you got to turn some 20th-round guy into something. You got to turn some 12th-round guy into something. And you haven't done that. And that's true. The White Sox haven't done that. And that's why right now we're sitting here suffering, watching this heap of nothing on the team. You know,
well, there's hope.
Aye.
We have pitchers that are showing up, and I'm very excited about the idea that Nick Nastrini is now here. I think his first start, it was good.
For a debut,
that's a good start. If he builds on that, you're excited. And then Jonathan Cannon here as well, and we had James Fox on this show recently talking about him, or was it Elijah Evans, one of those guys from Future Sox. Elijah's also with Just Baseball, who said this is a guy who's back end rotation but major league pitcher. And if you're adding Nastrini and Cannon to Garrett Crochet, and Fetty's already signed for this year and next, and you need to find room, well, Chris Flexen, I think you're gone. Mike Soroka, I think you're headed for the door as well. You got your opportunity. It has not been good. You put too many guys on base, and you're not the guy from 2019 that even I was hopeful for. I mean, I'm not gonna slam Chris Getz for taking a shot on that. He only had to give up Aaron Bummer to pick up five pieces. You take your shots sometimes by moving a relief pitcher. You do it. But also you have to understand when it may not be working out. And so it might be those two guys being shown the door. And don't forget, Mike Clevenger is on his way as well before May 1st gets here. So I think we're going to see some real turnover with the rotation. And I would be, and that's the same reason why I don't think that the dumb manager who says weird things and doesn't seem to understand what he's doing on a day-to-day basis, I don't know if that matches up with what the GM wants. And that's why I'm very curious as to whether or not Andrew Vaughn is really going to be starting every day when you want to get Gavin Sheets into the lineup. Because I look at what they're doing with the rotation, Ed, And I say they're sick and tired of being sick and tired because this was the plan, defense and pitching, and it ain't working. So now you got to bring up some more pitching.
Well, and the defense part of it, the reason why it's not working is because guys who are defensively challenged, like Andrew Benintendi, are also not hitting, right? You sort of expected Paul DeJong not to hit, but to play good shortstop. You kind of expected Nicky Lopez not to hit or Martin Maldonado not to hit.
Martin Maldonado's bad. He causes all kinds of problems out there. He is not a defensive plus, and he can't hit. I don't know why he's out there. I honestly don't.
And it's getting to a point where if Max Stassi's hip wasn't probably permanently damaged, I don't think Max Stassi's ever going to show up in a major league
uniform
again.
Well, Corey Lee's here forever now, I've decided. Because yeah, when you put Stassi on the 60-day, you were basically saying, all right, it's Lee and Maldonado, and when Stassi gets back, we'll determine whether or not we want to try him now instead of Maldonado.
I don't think Stassi's ever coming. He spent all last year rehabbing his hip, and it's back to bad. He didn't catch for an entire season, and his hip is back to bad. So I think that's over too. But yeah, I mean, we have Nicky Nasty and Johnny Boom Boom coming into the rotation, which is great. The question is Lenin Sosa going to pick it up here and prove that he can stick around and bring some value to the team defensively and offensively? Are you going to see somebody like Brian Ramos at some point trying to do that? Is Oscar Colas ever going to get another shot at this, or is he going to be brought up just a game at a time here and there? The turnover on the field that hasn't happened yet, I think, is because of there being sort of a lack of better options. But when Tommy Pham comes here, one of those underperforming outfielders is either getting benched or launched, right? Someone's not going to be here when Tommy Pham shows up, because you don't sign the guy without the intention of saying he's going to play almost every day.
They gave him $3 million with $1 million in incentives. This team looked like it was out of money. Where did he get the money? I mean, every time we sell a player, is it going into a little pool so he can finally create a Tommy Pham in the middle of April? Like, what? I don't get the money thing. If you had these millions of dollars at the beginning of the offseason that you're using in these little starts and spurts and everything, why didn't you go and use it in a better way than what you've done? Or did the owner basically say, this is all I have, and Getz is just trying to find a way to make enough money to get an extra player? Like, what is the dynamic? I really want to know, like, does he get a budget at the beginning of the offseason? Or is it basically like, yeah, I'm not giving you anything more than this. And then he's sitting there selling players and begging every day for $3 million for Tommy Pham after you have lost, what, 14, 15? How many are they up to now? They're two in the teens. I don't even pay attention to the record anymore because they're on a record-setting pace of badness. And now you're signing a guy for $3 million with $1 million in incentives.
Yeah, and that's either one, there's been a lot of campfire milkshakes being sold, which is great.
I hate that milkshake. I hate it.
I haven't had it yet, so I'll reserve judgment because I am a fat guy with a sweet tooth, so I might really like it. But just the idea of it, yeah. Or the fact that, yes, every trade that he has made has been for cash considerations. It is possible that he's sitting there saying, well, you know what, Jerry, if you're not going to give it to me, I'm going to make these moves. I'm not going to get players back. Instead, I'm going to get money back so that I can get a Tommy Pham and try and do something to help this team succeed a little bit. Or at least sit there and say, okay, you know what, Tommy, I'll give you every day at bats. You can show up and do what you want to do. And then some contender will. Now, you want to talk about trades. Some contender, if Tommy Pham plays like he did for the Diamondbacks last year, some contender will come along and say, yes, we can use him later on in the season. And they'll give you something of reasonable value back for him, or at least something that might be useful. It's not going to be quite the same for Andrew Benintendi, who I would love to see leave this team right now. But no one's going to take on that contract. You're going to have to pay Andrew Benintendi to play for somebody else, and there's no way Jerry signs off on that. So it's, I do think that that's what Getz has been doing. I think Getz is trying to build himself something of a war chest and sitting there saying, okay, Phillies, you'll give me X for Jose Rodriguez, and I'll take that money. You know, Yankees, you'll give me something for Jake Cousins, I'll take that money. Whatever he's got to do, wherever he's got to find it. So I will give Getz credit if that's what happened, that he is trying to at least find a way to get something, because yes, Tommy Pham playing in the outfield on a daily basis, especially if Luis Robert Jr. is going to take a while to get back, especially if you're not really satisfied with what Robbie Grossman has brought to the plate, which has been about what everybody else has brought to the plate.
That's the thing. Tommy Pham walks in, he should be playing right field. Like, that's what's funny about.
Absolutely.
Like, that's what's funny about the idea of, oh, well, we might have to put Sheets in right. Are you kidding me? Tommy Pham goes and plays right. You're stuck with Benintendi in left, and you let this Fletcher kid play every day in center field because he's the only one that you think could actually get better than what he currently is out of the three guys that I just mentioned. You want him out there developing to see what he could be, and so you're going to put him out there and play him as much as humanly possible. And that's what's so weird about this. What a weird, weird team. It's a team that has no chance of making it to the postseason, is on a historically bad run to maybe one of the worst records in history, and you need to find what works for 2025, and then as we've talked before, you're going to have to go out and buy three hitters at least. And you're going to have to figure out where the pitching's coming from, which at least they're doing with Nastrini and Cannon here. And I think Thorpe will move his way to AAA soon, the guy that they acquired in that deal when they sent Dylan Cease away. And you're going to see him before the year is over. At least he's pitching well down in the minor leagues. But they got to figure out their pitching. They got to figure out what pieces that they have under control in 25 and beyond is good. And yet they keep grabbing guys for one-year deals to come in here and take spots. So it's such a weird thing. It's like, we've got to find something to convince the diehards that it's better at the ballpark and they should come see this. But it's an absolute train wreck mess that they just keep saying, all right, put some more glue on that. Grab some Tommy Pham and kind of spread it over there in the right field corner. We'll try to hold this thing together. There's a lot at SoxInTheBasement.com for you, the Sox nerd who's on here every week. He's not on this episode. He'll be on the next one. He's got his blog with all kinds of great stats and trivia and things to kind of take your mind off of how things are going with the actual team up at SoxInTheBasement.com. We have our preferred sports books. If you're thinking about placing a wager and you're of age, go to SoxInTheBasement.com. Get some great deals, bonus bets, free money. You don't have to put a lot in to get a lot out, and it supports this show. And speaking of supporting things, we're supporting small business, like a coffee shop for veterans by veterans helping disabled veterans. Check out all the great items available to you through the Socks in the Basement store, powered by Vouch. Again, at SocksInTheBasement.com. What a weird team, Ed.
It is a weird team. And you sit there and you go, okay, why is Braden Shumake not playing every day? And Paul DeJong and his 176 average is out there. Nicky Lopez, who's hitting 132, is out there every day.
Yeah, why weren't you interested in Tony Kemp when he became available this week?
For that matter.
Why didn't you? You really do believe that much in Nicky Lopez long term? I know the kid's local. I know DeJong is local. But I don't believe in that. I'm not looking at that and saying, oh, yeah, there are better years ahead for those two guys. Like, I'm not seeing that.
Paul DeJong is several years away from the last time he was a viable. I mean, first of all, Paul DeJong's never played an entire season.
Again, it's so weird. Now, before we got out of here, there's a couple pieces of news that I noticed yesterday. First piece of news was when Aloy came back and the White Sox put a graphic up that he was back, and it said, hi, Aloy. By the way, Aloy returned, and the graphic was brought to you by Physicians Immediate Care, now part of Well Now Urgent Care. That's brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant. It was really tiny. It was in the top left corner, right over Aloy Jimenez, but his return was brought to you by Physicians Immediate Care. That was the first
As it always should be.
Right. I love that. Okay. That's better than the campfire milkshake. That's a real tie-in. Okay. Secondly, the other bit of news that seems to be happening is that Jerry Reinsdorf, who has majority ownership of NBC Sports Chicago and all the things that come out of it, it's his state media, also, and surprisingly, shockingly, has majority ownership now in Stadium, which is a media organization housed within the United Center.
Right.
And Stadium reportedly will be the new home of the White Sox, the Bulls, and the Blackhawks as early as right after the White Sox season ends, definitely by the time that the White Sox kick off 2025, and they're going to try to be a regional Sports Network, which, by the way, those are dying everywhere. So there's some game here being played by the billionaire where he makes money. Otherwise, he wouldn't be doing this. He gets more control. Otherwise, he wouldn't be doing this. But the one thing that I'm excited about, possibility of being able to just add it to my streaming, right? Like, I might be able to go into the old Roku, get Stadium, and watch it. The other thing I'm excited about is to see what happens to everybody. Because all these people that constantly say, well, I don't really work for Jerry Reinsdorf. Let's see if they move the stadium. Let's see if they just change shirts. Does their state media podcast move the stadium, or does it go away? Does Chuck move with him? How does that work? I think it'll be very interesting to see who Jerry loves and who he doesn't. Does he just take all the equipment from the one thing he owns and move it over to the other thing and put a sticker on it over the NBC symbol? I'm going to be fascinated by this entire move, where you have a guy who got himself majority ownership of one media organization, got himself majority ownership of the other media organization, and is now switching where his teams are broadcast from. What happens to the personnel? That's what I'm fascinated. As somebody who once was part of traditional media and moved around the country doing it and has seen some weird things happen. I remember the time that they brought in everybody into a room in a radio station cluster, and it was Free Pizza Friday. They have been advertising it for 2 weeks. We're having pizza, big pizza party, big pizza party, big pizza party. And they called off five people, and they're like, you guys get your pizza first. And as soon as they loaded up, they said, grab your stuff and your pizza, you're out of here. We're changing the format of your radio station. They felt
that's
like
that's kind of how that works.
Right, they felt like the pizza would ease the blow for the other people there. Like, oh well, that's too bad for Bob and Sue and them, but I got pizza for free today.
Yeah, you're talking to a guy who was making $20,000 a year with no benefits and got salary capped by a radio cluster because they flipped formats.
Media's already vicious. What's it like when Jerry Reinsdorf makes a media move? I am fascinated by this.
I know, and I understand that, like, NBC Sports, the nationwide NBC Sports probably wants to get out of the regional thing, and that may be playing a part in this, but this has been Jerry's dream going back to Eddie Einhorn being one of the partners when Jerry bought the team, and Eddie Einhorn wanting Sports Vision, right? Wanting that in-house, state-controlled television and media empire that, you know, the Cubs kind of have with Marquee, or that the Yankees have with the YES Network. But it feels like Jerry's so late to the game that the best thing he could do, if he really wanted to make money, he should be the first owner in the MLB that sits there and goes, nope, my games are streamable by anybody and everybody for a paywall, right? And just, I'm going to control that. It's my network, my content.
Put the White Sox streamable and then allow some guy in Nebraska to start watching White Sox baseball who doesn't have a team. That's what you do. And you make it so that, I mean, then again, MLB TV lets the guy from Nebraska watch anybody. So I don't think that's going to work. It just doesn't let me stream games. I can't stream the White Sox. I can watch the A's if I want to, but I can't watch the White Sox with their app.
No, and that's the point is that if there's anybody who could pull that off with Major League Baseball, it's Jerry Reinsdorf. He's got that much pull within Major League Baseball that he could sit there and say, you know what? I'm going to leave. I own this. I want this. I'm going to stream White Sox games regardless of geography. You might have to pay for it. You're definitely going to have to pay for it.
Oh, yeah, you're going to have to pay for it.
You might have to buy a Campfire milkshake in order to get it, but you're gonna have to pony up some cash. But I think there's a lot of people that would do that because, again, cable cutters like yourself, right, who don't pay for TV anymore because there's not a whole lot worth paying for when you have a dozen streaming networks. I would add that one on for Bulls, Blackhawks and White Sox games in a heartbeat rather than sit there and pay my cable bill every month just because I want to do that, or pay the equivalent to, you know, YouTube TV, or, you know, I'm missing a couple of them in there, but there's
no, but it's true. That's what I do. That's what I do. I don't keep television until White Sox season. And I'll be honest with you. Recently, I just like to go up to like one of the local watering holes and watch the game. Because instead of paying $70-some for TV, because I get everything else I want through streaming except for my sports. And so I would immediately, even though I hate the guy and I don't want to give him money, he would get me with this. I'd be like, oh yeah, I'll pay for the streaming of the Sox. What is it? $15 a month? Well, it's like my HBO. I'm very interested as to how the whole thing goes down. I'm also, you keep bringing up the campfire milkshake, and it just keeps running through my head like, I can't wait for the day when we learn something sinister about that milkshake. You know, like how when you learn that McDonald's shakes weren't really made out of milk. They're not milkshakes, they're just shakes, right?
They're neither milk nor shake.
Right, yeah. So like, I can't wait to find out that there's no milk in this either. Or like that the marshmallows are 5% styrofoam, but you just don't notice it.
Or that if you put them anywhere near a campfire, they explode.
Or become a sentient being. And it just starts walking around.
Starts walking around. Aloysius, you're being right.
Socks in the basement. Socks in the basement. Socks in the basement.
Socks in the basement. Heard everywhere podcasts can be found. And always on socksinthebasement.com.